Today is Thursday, September 20th, 2018, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington, sitting in for Sarah Williams. Coming up, as the Korean summit comes to an end, what comes next?
My hope is that it will be conducted with a level of respect and integrity for the process and for the people.
The U.S. Senate struggles to accommodate both the president's Supreme Court nominee and the woman accusing him of sexual assault. And Facebook's birthday fundraiser feature is bringing smiles to charities around the world. It's all on today's International Edition. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in announced at their summit this week that the North is offering to dismantle its main Yongbyon nuclear facility as long as the United States takes corresponding measures. While the Trump administration has signaled it welcomes the outcome of the summit as a sign of a positive step toward North Korea's commitment to denuclearization, experts point to a lack of specific details on how to achieve that goal. VOA's Steve Miller reports from Seoul.
The leaders of North and South Korea Wednesday hailed a series of agreements they said were aimed at turning the Koreas into a land of peace without nuclear weapons and nuclear threats. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korea's Moon Jae-in Wednesday issued the pledge at a summit in the North's capital, Pyongyang. North Korea's decision to dismantle its key missile site at Dongcheong-ri in the presence of international observers has prompted U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to invite North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho to meet with him during the United Nations General Assembly in New York next week. Moon's goal of revitalizing U.S.-North Korea relations appears to have been successful, with U.S. President Donald Trump saying tremendous progress has been made. Moon says he and Kim want to move forward together and create a new homeland for the 80 million people on the peninsula.
From Mount Paiutu to Mount Hala, we promise to make our beautiful rivers and mountains a land of peace without nuclear weapons and nuclear threats and pass it on to the future generation.
But the Heritage Foundation's Bruce Klinger tells VOA, while Moon did well on inter-Korean aspects of the summit, he fell short in securing concrete measures on denuclearization.
The Pyongyang push is highly conditional, calling on the U.S. to take unidentified but appropriate measures first.
He says that North Korea is looking for a direct interpretation of the Singapore summit declaration, where only after better ties are established.
And then get around to doing denuclearization.
Some analysts believe North Korea is looking for an end-of-war declaration from the United States before it dismantles a key nuclear facility. Yonsei University professor John DeLurie says the key is President Trump, who believes in the Singapore framework and a need to change their relationship with North Korea.
Donald Trump, as the president, is the one who I think has a commitment to working within that framework and moving it forward. And, you know, this is something that Trump could say, let's do this. I want to keep this process moving forward.
He says the political question is now if Kim's overtures are enough to move toward an end-of-war declaration. Steve Miller, VOA News, Seoul.
Among the top global stories, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has overwhelmingly won re-election as leader of his ruling party, assuring him another three-year term in office. Puerto Rico marks the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Maria, which devastated the island. Many are still trying to recover. Israel's Air Force chief briefs officials in Moscow on Israeli findings on the downing of a Russian military surveillance plane by a Syrian rocket earlier this week. Pakistan's prime minister has written to his Indian counterpart seeking to resolve outstanding disputes between the two nuclear-armed nations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute. To fans of the television and movie series Star Trek, Planet Vulcan is home to the USS Enterprise's science and first officer Spock. Now, a group of scientists with the Dharma Planetary Survey say that they have discovered what just might be the real Planet Vulcan of Star Trek fame. The scientists say this new planet is a super Earth, which is twice the size of our planet. It orbits a sun-like star called 40 Aridni A. This star is a third of a triple star system located in the constellation of Eridanus, only 16 light years away. The planet is said to be located just inside its star's optimal habitable zone, orbiting it once every 42 days. In 1991, Star Trek creator the late Gene Roddenberry and scientists from the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics recognized 40 Aridni A as Vulcan's sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. The U.S. State Department released its latest country report on terrorism this week. The report said, while the number of terrorist attacks declined in 2017, the terrorist landscape has grown more complex. Nathan Sales, the ambassador-at-large and coordinator for counterterrorism, said militant groups like Islamic State and Al-Qaeda are reacting to international efforts to defeat and degrade them.
ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and their affiliates have proven to be resilient, determined, and adaptable. They have adjusted to heightened counterterrorism pressure in Iraq, Syria, Somalia, and elsewhere. Foreign terrorist fighters are heading home from the war zone in Iraq and Syria or traveling to third countries to join ISIS branches there. We also are experiencing an increase in attacks by homegrown terrorists. We've seen ISIS-directed or ISIS-inspired attacks outside the war zone, on soft targets and in public spaces like hotels, tourist resorts, and cultural sites. We've seen this trend in places as far afield as Bamako, Barcelona, Berlin, London, Marawi, New York City, Ouagadougou, and many others.
Sales said terror-related incidents declined 23% last year over 2016, but most of that was a result of the IS defeat in Iraq. He said Iran remains the world's leading sponsor of terrorism and is intensifying multiple conflicts and undermining U.S. interests in Syria, Yemen, Iraq, Bahrain, Afghanistan, and Yemen, as well as globally. Tom Sanderson is a global risk consultant and co-founder and former director of the Transnational Threats Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. He told VOA's Victor Beatty, Iran's reach has been global for years.
We know that they have been active for many, many years, decades, in South America through their proxies, of course, across the Middle East and North Africa, but also into other parts of Africa, into North America, where Hezbollah has been active in both finance and obtaining materials and weapons for use in Lebanon and beyond. I'm not sure about Iran's support to militant groups in East Asia or Hezbollah's activity there. Additionally, Quds Force and other activities that they support worldwide are quite extensive.
Could the reimposition of U.S. sanctions over the withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal have an impact on Iran's ability to conduct such operations?
Well, it could have an impact on their ability by reducing revenue that goes to the state that can then be used for terrorist activities. However, I think that Iran has sufficient revenue and finances to continue their terrorist activity at the rate at which they have always conducted it. So even if we cut it off, I think they're still able to conduct the operations that they believe they need to conduct. There will also be an increased motivation to do so in the face of the renewed sanctions.
The report indicates Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, and other jihadist groups have decentralized and are adopting new technologies like simple chemical weapons and small drone systems to pose a threat far from their traditional operating zones. Is this the biggest threat?
It's hard to say what the biggest threat is because there continue to be so many, but the use of drones, which are extremely difficult to interdict, does constitute a significant threat today, as does the decentralization of these groups. When you hold territory, as ISIS did, which was very valuable for them, it was to some degree easier to strike them. When they are melting away into cities and into towns and into the countryside and into the desert, it becomes even more difficult to strike them. However, we are in a better position for having taken away their territory. But by no means is that threat gone, and in some ways can be more complicated as they become part of a number of communities worldwide where they are much more difficult to target.
The terrorist threat, where does it stand now after 2001, for instance?
It stands as less of a threat in terms of our knowledge of locations, in terms of our understanding of how to effectively fight it, and we still have much, much more to learn there and much more to do to reduce or abate the conditions that make terrorism a viable option for so many. We certainly have better security in this country. We have better information sharing relationships with other countries and internally among law enforcement and intelligence and military entities. So we are in a better position to understand, track, and fight terrorists worldwide, but they, of course, have also learned a tremendous amount in the intervening years.
Tom Sanderson said, although terrorism occurred in 100 countries last year, the five countries experiencing the most attacks were Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Iraq, and the Philippines. The U.S. report said China and Chinese interests are becoming increasing targets of terrorists, despite China's repression of the Muslim Uyghur community. Tom Sanderson said that is radicalizing Muslims. For the second time in a year, the Department of Health and Human Services says it can't locate nearly 1,500 migrant children, mostly from Central America, who were taken out of U.S. shelters and put into private placements. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The Department of Health and Human Services was responding to an inquiry from Ohio Senator Rob Portman, outraged that nearly 1,500 children were unaccounted for, only to find out that another 1,500 can't be located. He serves on a Senate panel introducing a bill the department take responsibility for the care of the 150,000 unaccompanied minors placed with adult sponsors. An Associated Press investigation found in 2016 more than two dozen unaccompanied children had been sent to homes where they were sexually assaulted, starved, or forced to work for little or no pay. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
The U.S. Senate remains divided over the fate of Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh has denied an allegation by Christine Blasey Ford that he sexually assaulted her when they were teenagers back in the 1980s. More on the battle over Kavanaugh's nomination from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
President Trump is standing by his Supreme Court nominee, Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
This is a very tough thing for him and his family. And we want to get it over with. At the same time, we want to give tremendous amounts of time. If she shows up, that would be wonderful. If she doesn't show up, that would be unfortunate.
Professor Christine Blasey Ford has been invited to testify Monday before the Senate Judiciary Committee. But Ford first wants the FBI to investigate her allegation that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when they were teenagers in the 1980s. Ford has the support from Senate Democrats, including Kirsten Gillibrand of New York.
The fact that she has to protect her children from death threats and this kind of assertions online about her, I think, is exactly why survivors of sexual violence do not come forward.
Law professor Anita Hill is also among those calling for a full investigation. In 1991, Hill accused then-Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexual misconduct, though Thomas was eventually confirmed by a narrow margin.
There is no reason for them to rush this and push this in with a six-day time frame. The American public really is expecting something more. The American public wants to know about what happened, and they want to know that the Senate takes this seriously.
Republicans have complained that the Ford allegation came after lengthy and contentious hearings where Kavanaugh was questioned by senators from both parties. South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune.
There have been 1,300 written questions that have been responded to by Judge Kavanaugh, and he met with 65 United States senators over the course of the last 2 months, and never a whiff of this letter until just this last week.
Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski says it's important that both Ford and Kavanaugh be heard.
My hope is that it will be conducted with a level of respect and integrity for the process and for the people.
Do you believe the allegations are credible?
I think that is exactly why we have this process.
The controversy has now put Kavanaugh's nomination, a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, in jeopardy, says legal analyst Paul Schiff Berman.
And I think that this accusation will solidify the Democratic opposition to Kavanaugh's nomination. And given the fact that Republicans hold only a small majority in the Senate, the defection of just a small number of Republican senators would defeat this nomination.
Kavanaugh was nominated to replace retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. His confirmation would solidify a conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
For more on this ongoing story, please visit us at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Facebook has always been a convenient way to send birthday wishes to friends, but many users have started taking advantage of a new feature to turn birthday wishes into donations to help a favorite cause, and it's turned into a huge success for charities. In its first year, Facebook's birthday fundraiser feature raised more than $300 million for charities around the world. Michelle Quinn has more.
Dan Jensen loves working as a volunteer, helping injured sea lions at the Marine Mammal Center in Northern California. He loves it so much that when his 65th birthday came around, he turned to his 1,400 Facebook friends to help raise money for the center.
Well, I should do something useful for my birthday, not just get good wishes. So I set a goal of $500 because I thought, you know, why not? And I hit the mark after a day or two. So I ended up with $2,300. It surpassed my wildest dreams.
Jensen used a relatively new feature on Facebook that makes it easy to invite friends and family to donate to the birthday celebrant's special cause. Jensen let his donors know they made a difference.
And so I said, you've bought a ton of fish. You're feeding all the animals we have on site for several days.
Facebook has been under scrutiny recently over how its services are used to spread hate or influence foreign elections. But its birthday fundraiser feature shows the power of using social media for good, says Facebook spokeswoman Royal Winner.
And what's really exciting about this is in the one short year that birthday fundraisers have been out there, over $300 million has been raised for nonprofits.
And the birthday fundraisers are having a big impact.
We've heard from a lot of nonprofits that this has really changed the way that they're doing fundraising. Whereas before, organizations would have to host a big gala or have high overhead in doing a big fundraising campaign or letter writing campaign.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
More than 50 years ago, Paul McCartney asked the musical question, Will you still need me when I'm 64? Now in his 70s, the answer is still yes. Larry London, the host of Border Crossings, joins me. Larry, Sir Paul is still cranking out the music.
And not only is it another new album, it is his first number one album in 36 years.
Wow, that's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. It's his 17th album, so when you say a few, as a solo artist, he's put out quite a few.
Now, does that go back to Wings, or was it a solo album?
Yep, that goes back to Wings, okay. Wings days in the 70s, and on into his own solo career. And he's had 8 number one albums throughout his solo career. Egypt Station is the name of the new album. He's currently on the Freshen Up Tour. That's unbelievable that at 76, he's still out there, still working as hard as ever. He doesn't let up. He doesn't ease back. He was in Brazil. This week, he's out in Glasgow and London. He's got quite a few tour stops. It's a world tour. One of the stops he made recently was at the Cavern Club in London, which is where the Beatles, of course, played quite frequently. And he surprised everybody and just showed up. They didn't expect it. It was an unbelievable experience. He loved being on stage. And if you look back at the Beatles' body of work, 18 number one hits for the Beatles over their career. So Sir Paul McCartney is no stranger to being at the top of the charts. He's back with a new single. The new album, as I mentioned, is Egypt Station. Let's check out the new song, which is called Come On to Me. Paul McCartney.
I saw you flash a smile that seemed to me to say you wanted so much more than casual conversation. I swear I caught a look.
That song is called Come On to Me. It reached number 6 on the Billboard charts. The last time Paul McCartney was in the top 10 was 1997. So that's his new song off his number one album, Egypt Station.
He may be 76, but he's getting better every day. Now, one of the popular online videos is called Carpool Karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
And he recently appeared on it and demonstrated that he's got a great sense of humor as well as a lot of musical talent.
He went back to his original childhood home. Of course, wherever he goes, he attracts a big crowd. So there was a whole bunch of people who gathered outside the streets of his childhood home because they knew he was inside. He went to a barbershop that he referenced in Penny Lane. He went to the street sign Penny Lane and signed it. And the host of Carpool Karaoke said, no one's ever going to believe that's really Paul McCartney's signature on the street sign. But it was a lot of fun. I watched that episode. And that was a couple months ago. And so now the album's out. It's number one, as I mentioned. Paul has a nickname. I bet you didn't know this. His nickname is Macca. Macca. He was asked why he's got a nickname Macca. He said, because everybody in Liverpool abbreviates everything. So Macca was obviously an abbreviation of McCartney. In GQ magazine, he revealed why he wrote the song Let It Be. He said his mom appeared in a dream of his. She had passed away. And she spoke to him in a dream and said, let it be, son, let it be. So he woke up and he said, I got to write a song. He studied a lot of instruments growing up, piano, and a lot of people don't realize this. Before the piano, before the guitar, it was the trumpet that Paul McCartney played as an instrument. He admitted he can't read sheet music. A lot of things that people just didn't know about Paul McCartney, one of the greatest songwriters of all time. He just made dots, and he said, I know it just goes dun, 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 but he couldn't tell you if it's a C or a B or a major or a minor.
Well, at this point, we won't hold that against him.
Not at all.
All right, Larry London, host of Border Crossings, thanks so much. And if you want to take a look at that Carpool Karaoke with Paul McCartney, just search for James Corden on The Late Late Show. He's got a lot of great, great Carpool Karaoke's to share with you. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook. Just search for VOA Now. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Mr. Tong, and I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the 2018 UN General Assembly. The theme of this year's debate, making the UN relevant to all people. Discussing the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.